Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Hey guys, welcome to the Leverage Podcast. Today we've got a special guest on, a longtime friend of mine. He's also a graduate of the Leverage program. He's currently, I think he's a blue belt, and he's done a really good job of implementing the teachings of Leverage into his life. So let's welcome Patrick to the call. Patrick, thanks for being on.
Hey, thank you.
And just to give you guys a little taste of what we're going to cover in this podcast, Patrick is going to teach you guys how he leveraged social media, more specifically Instagram, to make money with almost zero experience in the field of photography, which is pretty remarkable. You're also going to learn how he transitioned from working a 9-to-5 office job while to traveling the globe and working when he chooses, for the most part, as a digital nomad. So, Patrick, can you give us a quick description of your experience in Leverage and how it's shaped your current lifestyle?
So thank you again for having me on. I joined Leverage, I guess, about 2-3 years ago. And I was working a 9-to-5 job in New York City, which I really liked. I was learning a lot by working at this relatively small company at the time. But joining Leverage definitely gave me ideas and things that I wanted more for my life, like being able to travel the world, live in different places, and kind of have a lifestyle that was more my choosing versus what everybody kind of tells you you have to do. So I kept working at that job for probably another year and a half, 2 years after I joined Leverage. But I kind of saw a lot of things that, like, you guys living, traveling around the world. And I had not just seen in this group, but there was a community called Digital Nomads. It's kind of a cliche term for basically somebody that is location independent, can work wherever they want to around the world. So make money specifically even better if you're a U.S. citizen or somebody from a country that has like a strong currency where you can make U.S. dollars while in a different country where you're spending a lot less. So I knew that this was something I wanted at least to try. I don't know if I want it as going forward as full time, but basically I started trying to become a minimalist. That was the first step. I had a bunch of stuff. I had a ton of furniture, crap I didn't need in my apartment in New York City. And that probably took about 6 months to get rid of all that crap.
I remember when we were, when I was yelling at you to to get rid of it so you could start Airbnb your place. And I remember you were pretty good about it. You weren't super attached to your items as some people are. But 6 months isn't bad.
No.
You know, to overhaul and get rid of all this shit that's kind of tying you down.
Yeah, like, I had so much, even just, like, electronics that was from, like, 10 years ago when I was in college, like, old laptops and things like that. So, for me, I lived in New York City at the time. Not easy to just throw my stuff in my car and get rid of it. So what I would do is, kind of every morning I would kind of like plan to take something out of the apartment. And on the way to work, there was a Staples. So I would grab a bunch of crap, and you can donate electronics to Staples if you don't know. Staples, Best Buy, some of these other places will take old electronics.
And they'll give you a tax write-off?
You can do that, but I really wasn't concerned with that. I wanted it out of my apartment. Especially because I had a small apartment in New York City. I just want to get rid of it.
Yeah.
I did donate some stuff to Goodwill for a tax write-off, but really, like, the stuff's worth nothing. I mean, it's old. It's not worth anything. So the main goal was getting it out of my apartment.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the time at Goodwill, they'll write you tickets for a lot higher than the value of the items. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably a good idea. I didn't know where Goodwill was near my apartment, so Staples was good for the least electronics part.
Okay.
But you're right. I should have done more for a tax write-off. I can talk a little bit about tax at the end of this call because it just came up as tax season's coming right now. Basically, that was the first step, getting rid of my stuff. Then the second step was quitting the job. I knew that I wanted to quit a while ago. I wasn't really happy. I had plateaued where I was. I learned a ton by working with these two PhDs that I had been working for about 5 years in New York. But my job had kind of plateaued. I knew there was more out there for me. I knew I could do more. But I knew I needed to leave to do it because my boss really wasn't letting me do what I wanted to do. I was still like stuck doing everything that they were concerned with when I wanted to do more. So I quit my job and traveled Europe all summer. And
is that when you came on the Europe trip, or was that because you came on two Europe trips? The first one I believe was in 2015. And that probably gave you a little bit of a taste of, you know, the low cost of living over there.
That was before I quit. So that was the year, that was the summer before I quit. So I was still working full time when I came on the first Euro trip.
Right. I remember walking up that hill in Budapest talking about how you can potentially exit your job. And then the following year.
We did have that.
Yeah. And so between that trip and the trip last summer, it sounds like you made, that's when you made the transition.
Yeah, kind of was planning to do it. I knew that this was something I wanted to do in my life before I had kids or got married or anything like that, because once that happened, it was never going to happen. So I knew I wanted to force myself to do it. And I said summer of 2016 was the time to do it. And I guess a little bit extra that I can throw in there was that I also started this trip by doing this thing called the Nomad Cruise, which was I saw a few months before this advertisement on one of the communities I'm in on Facebook about this cruise, which went from Cartagena, Colombia to Portugal. And I was like, okay, that gives me a great start date. I must quit my job and get to Colombia before this day. Otherwise, I've obviously missed the ship. So that gave me my start date. So I quit my job on May 6th. I went to the Dominican Republic for a week or so with my dad, and then came back, and then I flew to Cartagena, Colombia, and started my new life.
And I remember in the group, you were you got a GoPro, and you started posting a bunch of videos, mm-hmm. and we all laughed at you and told you that you sucked and you were terrible on camera. But you kept at it because everyone sucks on camera.
Yep.
I still suck on camera. I used to suck a lot worse. It's one of the hardest things to do is sit there in front of a video camera and try to stay present and interact with it like it's a person. Because the whole time, you know, it's very it's very easy to be self-critical and second guess yourself and tell yourself that you suck. But you kept with it, which is awesome. And you were making these videos, and at least to my knowledge, that was kind of your intro into transitioning to a new career, right?
Yeah, so I played around with these, I guess you could call them vlogs, when my dad and I went to the Dominican Republic.
Video logs, right? Or video blogs.
Video log, yeah, basically. It's a very common thing. You heard of Casey Neistat online. It's a YouTube phenomenon. So I played around with that for a little while, and I'm still interested in doing it, but I did like five or six of those things. And I decided that what I wanted to focus on was something I was a little bit more passionate about at the time, which was photography. So on the cruise, I started taking pictures. I actually went to Europe with just my iPhone. I had an iPhone and I did have a GoPro, like you said. And I started with 250 Instagram followers and not even a name yet. I started posting just photos that I was interested in posting. And then when I met up with you guys in the middle of the summer, Tyler, who was part of the group, actually came up with my current Instagram name, which is the Ginger Nomad. So he gave me this like pretty, I think, well branded name because everybody remembers it as soon as you say it, and it describes me pretty well, which is I'm a ginger, I have red hair, and I'm a nomad right now. I don't really have a place to live. I roam the world and stay in Airbnbs. So I continued posting all summer. And also when I was on the cruise, I was learning from other people who did have bigger Instagram followings. I talked to one girl who went from 1,000 followers to 18,000 followers in 18 months. I was like, wow.
How hot is she?
Possible. You can actually, she's not that hot. I will tell you.
Yeah. Okay.
I can show you.
You don't have to tell us.
She's not hot, but she, yeah. She's consistent is what she is.
Right. And she puts quality content up there. Yeah.
She puts quality content and she is relatively interesting that she's traveling the world. I don't think she's the best blogger out there, to be honest with you, but she was able to grow from 1,000 to 18,000 in 18 months, which I think is pretty cool. So I kind of thought, wow, I guess I might be able to do this. So what I started doing as I was in Europe was I just started posting consistently. I took pictures of, buildings. I took pictures of food. I took pictures of just like traveling. I also took pictures of, like these co-working spaces and just giving the idea to people that you can have a lifestyle where you're working and traveling at the same time. So hence being a digital nomad. So at some point we met up in the summer. I was continuing to post. By the time I came home, I actually only had, I had grown from 250 to 2,500 followers in 3 months during the summer, which I thought was pretty good. I was getting a lot of engagement.
Followers.
I had a lot of 10x my followers in 3 months. So not too bad.
And how did you do that specifically? Was it just through consistently posting quality content? Did you use any of the Instagram, sort of hacks or programs that will automatically follow and unfollow people? I know there's a lot of, technology like that you can utilize.
Yeah. So, several of those tricks, specifically, the follow unfollow method is probably the best. While I was in Europe, I had turned on this bot called getriver.com, which did exactly that. It followed and unfollowed people for you. And that's pretty much how I think I grew that quickly. Mm-hmm. So every time you follow somebody, they get a notification on their phone or whatever that I've followed them. So the first thing I'll say is you need to get the content first. You need to make sure you're posting good quality content. So when you follow somebody and they go to your profile is interesting enough that they want to follow you back. If somebody follows you and they go to your profile and your profile is junk, then they're not going to follow you back. So I focused on the content first. Then I started growing the following. This was a lot of work. This wasn't just like turning on this bot. Like I would sit at, airports when I was traveling between cities and countries in Europe and follow people myself and comment. I would also like commenting on other people's posts is important too. So if you see a post that you like, I'll write a little comment versus just liking the photo, which then gives them an opportunity to comment back at you. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of work. It's not just like you have to be committed to wanting to do this if you are interested in like growing your following.
Just like anything, I think if you want to put out, if you want to start a business, people think you can just start a business overnight and strike it rich. And what you hear about as overnight successes are usually about 10 years in the making. Even longer. And it's not that it's an overnight success. It's that you've been putting up quality content, doing quality work, and then you hit an inflection point and, or critical mass, as they call it. And then all of a sudden, you know, you kind of get that first majority to buy in, and now you're well known overnight, but it's never fucking overnight. So,
it's not overnight. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So
I agree with you.
When you quit your job and kind of, you know, left for Europe and Colombia to cruise across the Atlantic on a whim, did you have any savings? What was your plan in terms of living, making ends meet?
Yeah, I definitely had savings. I wouldn't recommend anybody just to quit and not have any savings. I had enough money to live for over 6 months without having a job. But that being said, if I spent all my time in Western Europe versus Eastern Europe, that would have been cut down to 3 or 4 months.
2 months.
yeah. So I specifically chose countries, for the most part, that were cheaper, with the exception of Stockholm and Copenhagen, which I just wanted to go to. But I did leverage some skills and photography while I was in Stockholm. I actually created a video for this hostel in Stockholm. They got me a couple free nights in this hostel in Stockholm, which saved me like 100 or 200 bucks. So I had started leveraging my skills to get free, like cheaper places to stay or even free places to stay in Europe, but didn't really, really start until recently.
And to just correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that you said you did that by approaching the manager while you were staying there and offering to do a video blog showing his hostel, right? Just kind of walking around, videotaping, correct, and putting that on YouTube. I remember watching the video and thinking, well, great way to get a couple nights stay.
Exactly. I was actually playing a lot with podcasting while I was in Europe. So I approached them first to do the podcast. And the podcast was just to, I think he gave me like a free dinner or something for the podcast. Nothing big for the podcast, but it got me my foot in the door to talk to him. And then I was like, all right, I'm interested in doing a video for your hostel. Would you be interested in doing a trade here? Could I do a video on YouTube for your hostel, and you give me two or three nights in your in a private room versus like staying in like a 4-bed dorm? And he said sure. So I got a few nights in this hostel in Stockholm, which was a pretty big value for me because Stockholm is not a cheap place to be.
Yeah, I stayed at that same hostel. I think it was like 130 bucks a night. So not bad.
Yeah.
And that's expensive for a hostel.
Right. It was definitely an expensive hostel. But there weren't many options for cheap places to stay in Stockholm, and the other hostels in the area were kind of crappy. So it was good for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's expensive for hostels as far as they go. Not expensive you know, you can't find super cheap hostels in Scandinavia. You can find, you know, $3 hostels in Bali, but that's not going to fly in Western, Northern Europe.
Right. It was cool. And then I left and actually met up with you guys. We went to Balaton Sound and stayed in Budapest. Mostly when I was there, I was staying with Cameron and Airbnbs. But I continue to post and just make my content better. So I guess that gets us to the end of Europe, which was in September, late August, September. And then I went to Thailand, which is the next part of the story. First off, traveling Europe and the Nomad cruise got me a bunch of contacts while I was doing it. I actually upgraded on the cruise to a balcony room And the balcony room, you got access to this thing called the Waves Club. It's kind of like a yacht club on the ship. And the best thing about being the yacht club was not just the fact that you had a nice place to go. It was the fact that everybody that actually was making a business out of their travels and didn't even have to be traveled. Like these are the people that actually had a business that I wanted to network with. So I made a bunch of friends in the yacht club. And one of them, his name is Miles Beckler, was putting on this retreat in Thailand. And he actually offered, after Europe, probably like mid-September, for me to go and do videos for him in Thailand. So he, besides the flight, I didn't pay for a dime to go to Thailand. I got, he paid for my accommodations. He paid for all my food. And what I had to do every day was video this retreat, which was an entrepreneurial retreat for location independent entrepreneurs. And I'll post some of the links after this call in the thread. And I made videos every day. So each day of the retreat, I would make a new video, basically for him to post on his social media so he can promote this thing and basically have FOMO for the next one. So people want to come to the next one.
And
I don't even think he's.
Go ahead. Sorry. I was gonna say.
Go ahead.
How much work was that for you? What was the daily amount of filming and editing?
So during the day, I would film maybe an hour or two, but it was something I was gonna do anyway, and I. It was something I was doing anyway because it was fun for me to do this filming, and then I actually got to participate in the event. I got to learn all the social media stuff that they were teaching at the retreat. I got to actually listen to people, and then I would sit there and film a little bit of time each during the event. And I also got to bring my drone with me. That was really the first time I got a lot of time to play with my drone, and really start using that to develop my piloting skills to take good footage. So it was fun for me to go, even though I was filming 2 to maybe 4 hours a day, I was having a good time. And then the part that kind of sucked was in the evening, I would have to edit the video. So I would sit, they would feed me drinks, and I would just sit at the bar while everybody was kind of socializing and edit a video for 3 or 4 hours a night.
Yeah, editing is a bitch.
Yeah.
And the more footage you get, the longer it takes to edit.
That is true. It was still fun. I was still interacting with people while that were there. People would come over and want to see what I was doing. So it was still good social networking. But it was still me. It was hard work. It wasn't easy.
Yeah. And those were what, maybe 4 minute clips at the end?
Yeah, they were between 2 and 4 minutes. Okay. A couple of days I was tired and didn't really want to spend too much, so it was like 2 minutes. And some days were longer, and they were like four and a half minutes. And they weren't super crazy videos. They were mostly us either having fun, things of people giving presentations, or drone shots, or a couple like testimonial interviews. So they weren't like super crazy. Most of it was overlaid with music.
And what was the value of the trip? What would you have paid had you not done that?
I not done it. I think he was charging $2,500 for you actually to participate in the event. So it wasn't too expensive, but it was at least $2,500.
How many days?
I probably 6 days, I think.
Okay.
So six day retreat. And in addition to that, he picked me up. I didn't have to pay for any transportation. After the retreat, he paid for me, him, and he hired two, a brother and sister that were our cooks. And we all stayed for like 4 more nights. At a different part of Phuket and kind of just hung out and had fun. So that was another $500-$600 value. So I got about $3,200 of value on that trip. The only part I had to pay for was the actual flight myself.
And if you do the math on that, it sounds like it's coming to about $500 a day. And it seems, you know, let's say you put in 5 hours a day, so you're making $100 an hour. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And you're also getting the value from
think about it that way.
You're also getting the value from being at the retreat. And I'm sure those connections and whatever content, you know, they went over had value as well.
It definitely had value. I learned about social media, how you can like actually measure Facebook content, like Facebook ads that you actually pay for, all sorts of things I can go over in a different call. But basically, the biggest value I got is now I'm part. We have a WhatsApp group. I can message those people at any point in time. I know people that if I have a specific question on a specific topic, I can go to this person or this person. So definitely the networking piece of it is invaluable compared to even the $3,200 in actual value I probably got out of it.
Yeah, that's great. And what'd you do from there?
So then I came back. I was living in New York City temporarily at the time. Was living in New York, I'm still doing software development for a couple of clients that I have. I was mostly doing that in New York until February. And then in February, I had planned to go to this yoga retreat in Bali. So I went to the yoga retreat in Bali with all my I got rid of my apartment in New York again. It was only a sublease, so I was there temporarily, and booked a flight to Bali. Went to the yoga retreat, and that's kind of like this last month has been pretty crazy. I brought my drone with me to Bali. First off, I got about half off of the yoga retreat because of doing photos. So there's already a value there.
No videos this time, just photos.
This is just photos. So I offered video originally, and then they said, no, we're just interested in photos. Cause they want to post it on their like Instagram and, promote their yoga businesses. So, but I fully intended to do, videos as well. So I brought my drone. I brought, my professional camera, three lenses, GoPro, and my computer, and left for Bali. So while I was in Bali at the yoga retreat, doing photos, one night, one of the girl's friends, her girlfriend and her boyfriend came to the retreat, and we started talking. And I had pitched the idea to one of the, somebody on Instagram that had a villa to start doing the same thing I did in Sweden to get free places to stay. So I told them, hey, would love to stay at your villa. It's a bit of my price range. Could we do a trade? And this guy that messaged me back on Instagram actually was totally up for it. He wanted better photos for his place. So we traded two nights in a villa in Canggu for me giving him professional photos.
Sweet.
So I pitched this to this guy named, sorry, go ahead.
I just said that's sweet.
Yeah. So that was the first one. And I pitched this idea to this guy named Amir, who was the boyfriend of the girl that came to the villa that night or to the retreat that night. And he was like all into it. He was like, all right, cool. I love this idea. I wonder if we could scale it. So the next day he actually starts reaching out to people on Airbnb versus Instagram. And what he did was he on Airbnb, you could actually choose contact hosts before you do a booking. And he would basically kind of give them the same spiel. I love your place. It's a bit outside my price range. Could we do a trade? And so we got a few originally.
You were just offering to improve their Airbnb photos, or was it a bigger offer?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, we're offering to improve their Airbnb photos for the most part.
So you targeted places that look like shit on the photos, but you could tell were nice. bad photos.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So we would target Airbnb properties that had crappy photos that I knew would be a nice place to stay. The first place we stayed was this 4.5-star resort in Nusa Dua, which is in the south part of Bali. It ended up working out perfectly. It was a 2-bedroom place with a pool inside of the apartment, with also the full amenities of a full resort. So we did that. We stayed there actually for 5 nights. That was actually pretty long stay. And they actually extended us 2 extra nights later. But I had already planned to go somewhere else. But Amir and his girlfriend stayed. So it went from just taking photos, and then he extended his offer by actually, doing reviews on TripAdvisor, Google, Maps reviews, and also giving them feedback on like, hey, you could improve this with your Airbnb. We believe you could make more money if you did this, blah, blah, blah. So we got that one. We got one more. And then what really was the exciting part was the last one. The last one I did before I left Bali, which is a 5-star resort in Seminyak, which is on the west coast of Bali. And we ended up offering them 2 videos. So we did a 1.5-minute video, and we did a 30-second video for them, which we'll be posting shortly. I'm just waiting on final approval from them so I can show you guys. And that got us 3 nights in this 5-star resort, and the value of that was $1,000 a night hotel room. So about $3,000 for that. And by the time we left, I had actually done some editing while we were there so they could see finished work or partially finished work. And they gave us a cash contract by the time we left, which was a value of about $700 for 4 additional videos. And then hopefully, if these videos go well, we are going to be invited back in June to shoot more content for a much more sizable rate.
Is this a chain? They have multiple locations?
It's more of a boutique hotel. It's called the Legia in Bali. They're building 1 additional hotel on a different island in Indonesia. But it's also cool because they're part of this group called the Leading Hotels of the World. So assuming that they submit this video and the Leading Hotels of the World organization sees this, we might be able to go to other hotels around the world and do the same thing.
Well, you could easily just call the other ones in the network and say, hey, we did this video for the Legion, and
yep,
you should let us do yours because clearly you have that third-party validation. So that's awesome, man. It's interesting to hear the whole story of how you transitioned from full-time software developer to basically full-time content creator through videos and photos. And you're now getting paid for that by people with pretty deep pockets, it sounds like. And, you know, companies that have in the hospitality industry, hotels, and, you know, they're willing to spend that money. So you're providing a good service for a good market, and the sky is the limit. You know, the better your content gets and the better you are at marketing and sales, I see a lot more upside in this business than probably in the software developing business, unless you were to start your own thing with some, you know, with a new product to market. But right. This also affords you the luxury to travel, be where you want to be. And it sounds like you're having a lot of fun.
It's definitely a lot of fun. I don't think I'm going to get away fully from software, but I'm also starting to create software to help manage all the content I create, because I find that it's difficult to do. So my plan is really to merge all these like different aspects of my life together into one like company, basically. So the company can sell footage, it could sell software and all sorts of stuff. So
well, I wouldn't be surprised if you came up with a program that merged this or that basically allowed you to create content faster or manage content faster. And who knows, if you come up with something proprietary for that in the software industry, you could be a fucking billionaire. So I'm sure there's a lot
of
people.
That's exactly the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's cool to see how this all comes together. If you watch the Steve Jobs, Stanford commencement or graduation speech, he talks about connecting the dots and how all of the things kind of leading up in his life that didn't seem kind of relevant, they all contributed to Apple's success. So, you know, I can reconnect the dots in my life too. And, it becomes very obvious. So a lot of the time, you know, we might be thinking, hey, we're doing this thing and I don't know why the fuck I'm doing it. And I don't know how it's going to fit into the bigger picture, but it almost always does. So.
Yep. It's actually one of my favorite quotes. And like, I see even farther back than my job in New York City, like all the dots that got me from where I was in college to where I am now, if I had made a different choice, I think I would end up in a different place. And you can't see that that's going to happen, but you just have to believe that it's going to work out right and just keep doing what you love and what you're interested in, and it's going to work out. So.
Yeah. And you got to pay your dues too. You know, it sounds like you've really been putting a lot of time and effort into the photography and the video makings. You know, those first videos, like I said, were so bad. You know, we had so much fun laughing at your videos, and now you're getting paid to make dope videos. So you got to start somewhere. Yep. And you got to pay your dues.
And exactly. And I still think the content I'm creating is not the best. But I was blown away. I can't wait to show you this video. Sergio, who actually just met last week in San Diego, which was perfect that I went to San Diego on my way home. He edited one of the videos for me for the Legion. And he made my content look so much better than I thought I could ever make it. So that's another thing I'm kind of trying to do is like my time is more valuable doing the things I'm really good at, and then I can hire out the other pieces.
Well, Sergio's been editing content for me for the past year or so, and he's gotten really good.
Right.
And that's another funny story. That's actually awesome. If there could be some sort of, you know, if you and Sergio could find a way to work together, because it definitely doesn't sound like editing is a good use of your time, and he's not bad at it, and he's probably really cheap at this point. So that's a that could be a,
yep,
a great win-win. And he's sick of driving for Uber.
Well, I already pitched him a couple ideas, and if he does really good at these other couple videos, I would actually love to take him back to Bali if we get invited. So I definitely think it could be a good collaboration, because really what my goal is to have fun doing what I want to do. And if I can go out and take the videos, fly the drone around, get the content, and then he can be at the same time editing it all together, guess what? The hotel is going to be super happy because we're going to get them a video twice or four times as fast as if I'm doing all the work myself. So
yeah, 100%. So just to kind of circle back, you know, a part of leverage as well is your social life, and, you know, making sure you're managing, obviously, your career, living a lifestyle that you want, having fun socially. How has your social life changed, you know, when you look at it now versus when you're working in, you know, in the kind of in the office as a developer? What do you see the difference there?
There's a lot of difference. I think I'm much happier right now in general. I would go to work every day and kind of just interact with the people around me. And my focus was mainly just on the software and the things we were building. And you had to worry about your boss telling you what to do. And had a good time because my coworkers were really cool guys. But again, well, one thing is they're all guys. I'm an engineer. Very few women work in engineering.
Just the really hot ones, right?
yeah, there are some really hot ones. There's a few, but it's few and far between. So now the sky's the limit. Like, okay, so I not only am doing photos for hotels, I'm also trying to become like a portrait photographer. And this past week in San Diego, I reached out to a girl that I had talked to on Instagram the last time I was in San Diego, but we never got a chance to meet up. And if you look at my Instagram right now, I think it was like three posts ago, we did a photo shoot. So I got to hang out with this really hot girl all afternoon in San Diego and go take photos of her. And then we had dinner, and then she met up with me on Sunday night before I left. So I'm getting more opportunities to meet people, to do things than I would have ever had just sitting in my office where I'm only interacting with my 10 coworkers every day that I interact with.
Well, there's two jobs in life that probably have the most access to women. One is a club promoter. The problem with the club promoter is they usually do very, very poorly financially. So they're usually broke, but they have tons of beautiful women around them. And the other is a photographer. And the great thing about a photographer is they have tons of women around them, and a lot of the time they're getting paid pretty handsomely. So you've somehow managed to go from probably the worst possible field in the world. You know, maybe a maybe an IRS agent is has a little less access to beautiful women, but you know, certainly a software developer in the military space to a photographer in the modeling space is a pretty good transition.
It's not too bad. And part of the goals of me and Amir are going to create a company, and part of the goals are not just to create a photography and video part, but we want to link Instagrammers and influencers to hotels like the Legian. So part of our business is going to be having to reach out to models and hot girls on Instagram to talk to them. So that basically I'm creating the life that I want. I'm creating that social aspect. Do I think I have it right now? No, I don't think I have it. I think I'm transitioning. I don't have endless amounts of girls hanging out with me every minute. I'm currently in my parents' house in Virginia. But do I think that's coming? Yeah, I think that will be, I think it'll be coming not too long away. So,
well, the good news is you don't have to take any extra action to interact with hot girls. You know, when you first joined the group, you were taking a lot of action to do that. You were, you know, running around the streets of Manhattan, talking to girls during the day. We were going out to bars and clubs, and, you know, you were building your social muscles that way. And all of those skills have probably paid off pretty significantly just in your interactions now, probably more comfortable around, you know, girls that you find really intimidating, really hot. And now you don't have to go out looking for it. It comes to you. Where you naturally interact with them based on making money, which is pretty awesome.
Not bad. And as part of the reason to go back to New York, if it wasn't for girls, I don't know if I would be going back to New York, because I really do like the, there's a term called geo-arbitrage. Have you heard of that one?
No. Let's explain that.
Geo-arbitrage is basically like I explained earlier, make US dollars and live in somewhere cheaper. Like, I could definitely go and live in Bali right now, and I can, for the same price I paid for breakfast this morning, I could probably eat the entire day.
Yep.
I
was just there. So. And what he's saying is true.
It's like insanely cheap. Like, you could pay $10 a night if you wanted to live in like actually a decent place in Bali. I was paying like $40 a night, but still you could. And basically it's a really good idea because, which I would recommend to a lot of the guys in the group is like, okay, if you're only making, let's say you're making $1,000 a month right now, and you can make that $1,000 a month anywhere. You don't have to be in your house and who knows where in the United States. And your expenses are $2,000 a month, or let's just say you're making $2,000 and you're spending $2,000. Now, if I can still make that $2,000 a month in Bali and my expenses go down to $500 a month, well, now I have $1,500 to play with, and I don't have to worry about making all this money. I can focus on just building my stuff and just building things that are going to make me money. And then 6 months down the road, well, now you've worked your time and effort to make something that's going to make you money longer term. So I actually plan to go back to Bali in June, assuming that they pay for me to do it. But I want to go back to New York right now because it is a great place to be to hang out with girls and have fun. So,
yeah, New York in April and May isn't too bad. It's a good time to be there. I plan to be there in May, and then I'm off to Europe for the summer again. So tell me this, what do you think was the biggest thing you learned from Leverage that helped you to create this lifestyle?
Biggest thing. It's hard to say exactly. I think it's all the little things over time. Getting destroyed in the Hamptons, doing stupid shit there, having you yell at me in Europe, all these little things over time, and kind of like those little things over time add up to be more confident in what you're doing. If there's one,
so getting feedback on your social skills where you might have been doing some silly things, getting yelled at for that, and seeing some patterns of inefficient behavior, correcting those.
Right. But also realizing that there is a different life out there. You don't have to be tied down to your 9-to-5 job. You don't have to be stuck somewhere. You can create a life that you want. But it also takes, I guess maybe this is it. It's like, to really create the life that you want, you have to be well-rounded and work on your social skills with girls and work on your social skills in business and all these things together that you learn over time by being part of Leverage, build up to having a complete well-rounded, life. And I'm still working on it. And I hope to, I do need to start posting more and asking you guys more questions because my dating life is not the best right now. It's not terrible, but it's not the best, but everything else I'm pretty happy with. So that's, I think.
Well, yeah, I love it. And I love how you explain that because that's exactly it. And you go through transitions, you know, when you're transitioning careers, it's not the best time to be focused on dating. But trust me, once you get to a point where your career's clicking along and you've got some money in the bank and things are easy and, you've got some extra time to go to different places, you start going to festivals and you start going on trips, you go to Burning Man, and then all of a sudden your social life just explodes. And especially when you're doing something interesting and you've got that passion behind your words and, you know, you're going to be way more attractive and there's definitely a buildup there. I think a mistake that some guys make is they try to just go too hardcore with work. And especially if you're in a field like software engineering, you know, you could spend your whole life trying to make a ton of money as a software engineer. And then you hit 40 and you've neglected all social skills completely. And then you think you're just going to go out there and do great. Guess again. So you kind of have to take it in waves, right? You got to maybe take a step back, do some social training, find your passion, start a new job, become an entrepreneur, go back, do more social stuff later. And eventually it all just kind of mixes together and you find that it becomes very easy. So it's a very similar path that I went on, just different industry, almost exact same story. Just, you know, some, like I said, different industry, different field of making money. And pretty much every story I've seen, kind of follows that same exact blueprint.
And I would say too to people, like, what are you waiting for? Like, I did get a lot of value by waiting additional time where I was, by working with the engineers and stuff that I was working with. But I wanted to do this 2 years prior to when I actually did it. And who knows where I would be if I had done this 2 years earlier. But, I don't know. You're just like, don't waste your time. You're living now. Don't wait until you're 40 or 50 to realize, oh shit, I should have gone and lived and like hung out in Bali and hung out with hot girls versus just sit at my 9-to-5 job. every day while.
Yeah, you'll be you'll be old and wrinkly with old balls by then, and your options. Although you'll still have plenty of options as a 40, 45, even 50, 55-year-old in certain places in the world, like Southeast Asia, Eastern Europe, Ukraine. You can still do great as an older, distinguished gentleman, but, you know, you're limited in terms of your dating options. So that's great advice. Lastly, you mentioned kind of in the beginning of the call to ask you about some tax advice. Can you dive into that real quick?
Yeah, real quick. So first off, I had a full-time job. I made, let's just say, $50,000 in the first half of last year, which I paid taxes on and everything. In the second half of last year, let's just say I made $30,000, which is significant. I definitely made significantly less in the second half of last year. But so I was pretty worried because that was all given to me pre-tax. I didn't pay any tax on it because it was self-employment income by me charging some clients as a consultant. So I was worried actually that I was going to have to pay like 30, 35% tax on that money that I made as a consultant. But guess what? Because I've been working – traveling, working on my business, working on my photography, all these travel expenses are tax deductible. They are all part of me building my photography and my digital nomad lifestyle business. And I paid zero taxes on that $30,000, and I also am getting a tax refund on the other money that I've paid during my first half of the year when I was had a full-time job. So so you have to realize that, yeah, there are ways to hack the system. And actually, the U.S. government is actually pretty nice in this, is that they help you try to create a business. They help you with this. But you have to be willing to take advantage of it. And people think, oh, well, I can't do that. I can't travel. I don't have the money to travel. Well, guess what? The U.S. government just paid for me to travel around the world for the last half a year.
They paid for me too, my friend. They've been paying for me for the last 8 years. Yep, and you're absolutely right. That's great advice.
I feel a little bad because it was sent to a foreign country, but, you know, it is what it is. So.
Yeah. I think they're doing okay.
I think they're doing okay, and I don't want to give any more money to them than I have to. So, there's definitely advantages, tax advantages that you can take advantage of. But really, the caveat that is you can't just go travel around the world and have fun. You have to be building something at the same time. So when I talk to my accountant, he's like, make sure you have an Instagram account that you're posting on, have proof that you're doing things. Like, I would sign up and do business classes online. The cruise was actually a write-off because it was a conference. So as long as you can prove it, you're fine. But if I can't prove it, then I have a problem. So if you just go and party your ass off for a year traveling around the world, you're still gonna have to pay taxes. So.
Did you write off the Euro trip? I hope you did.
I think I did. Actually, I have to think about that. I don't think I told her. So I don't need to do that. I have to call her tomorrow. So,
yeah. Well, there's another thousands of dollars to write off. So, more money.
More money. So, definitely take advantage of those things.
And I hope you're writing out. I hope you're also writing off your meals and entertainment expenses, which you can get a half of those deducted. Your entertaining clients, your networking, and you know, those drinks at the bar, you're doing business, my friend.
Oh, absolutely. I'm definitely doing that. Anytime we go out, do that. I take my camera with me a lot, too. Just like my friend and when I was in California was like, you're such a dork. You're taking your camera with you to dinner. I'm like, yeah, I might be a dork, but I can also write it off as a tax expense by going and taking my camera. Like, I'm obviously going to bring it to a club. But if I'm just going out to dinner with some people and I take a picture of my food and upload it to Google Maps as a review, it adds value. So do it sparingly, not when you're out with girls and stuff, but if you're just going out with your buddies, it's not a bad thing to bring a camera occasionally. So,
well, hey, the guy who created Girls Gone Wild did okay with a camera. So there's ways women will do things on a camera that they wouldn't usually do. So, you know, you never know.
I have some pretty fun. I have to upload this, actually. I'll create a short video from La Favela. I have a ton of La Favela footage
from
that night. So
La Favela is the most consistent party in Seminyak. For those of you wondering, it's a cool the bar / nightclub, and every fucking night that place just goes off from midnight till, you know, 3:30, sometimes 4 a.m. And always a good time, you know, expensive drinks compared to the rest of Bali, but still, you know, you're paying pretty cheap still, you know, $10 a drink, which isn't bad in U.S. prices. So,
yep. And you're right. It's like the, what's the place in Budapest?
Like the Zimpla.
It's the Zimpla of Bali.
Yeah.
Yep.
Zimpla of Bali. Zimpla is a very similar, you get a similar type of vibe. A little bit different looking, but, you know, very consistent, always fun, always a party. And, you know, when I was in Bali, I just kept going back to La Favela.
I didn't even realize you were there. You were like a mile from where I was. I didn't even realize you were there. So.
Yeah, me neither. I didn't know you were there either until you bumped into David. That's hilarious.
That was pretty crazy.
All right. Well, Patrick, thanks so much for sharing your story, and it's super inspiring. I love how you were able to make this happen. And I remember thinking while we were on that hike up to the lady, you know, on the mountain in Budapest, I was like, fuck, how is this guy going to get out of this shitty position he's in? But you pulled it off, man. So kudos to you.
Yep.
I should have more faith in my clients. A lot of the time, you know, Cameron too. At one point, I was like, oh, Cameron, you know, this guy's just, huh, what's he going to do? How's he going to get out of LA? Now he's full time living in Budapest, crushing it.
Yep.
So, you know, I need to have more faith in my own product, I guess. Seems to work.
You do. It works. And, I mean, there's always I sometimes get worried that I won't be able to make it work and stuff, but there's always a fallback plan. I have about 10 emails in my inbox right now of people wanting to hire me. So, but I believe I just need to keep pushing forward and trying to make stuff happen. And I think it will happen. So.
Awesome. That's fucking great, Patrick. Congrats on all your success. And, let's open up the call. I'm going to unmute everyone. If anyone has questions for Patrick.
I just wondered if Patrick was making any money off Instagram with any kind of CPA offers or anything like that, or just basically with his photography.
That's a good question and something I wanted to kind of go over. I think there's two ways that you could go about it on social media. And you could definitely go into it trying to upload content consistently and try to get people to pay you for posts, try to upload content and get people to, and try to get enough content out there to get AdSense and money through that. Right now, no, I'm not making money at that. I believe my time is better spent trying to be an entrepreneur and create the business side of this first and just work on good content and work on my software. And hire people like Sergio to do the video editing for me. And as I build the business side, that means that I can create more content. So I do need to still focus on my software, which is how I'm making money. But I'm not focusing on the posting to get paid yet, because that's a lot harder. I find that I need like 10 to 50,000 followers to do that. I need to have YouTube videos going up daily or every other day to really make money at that. That's hard. But yeah. If I have good content up there, I can still leverage my accounts and just push people to my Instagram to say, hey, this guy actually knows what he's doing. He has good content. Let's hire him.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Marty. Who else has a question for Patrick?
I'm basically just trying to be a nomad right now also. So I'm trying to do it with software development.
Yep. So we should talk offline, but I think I have some ideas. And I think if you're not tied to LA right now, you should get on a plane and go to Thailand or Bali and just work your ass off. And if you want to be a nomad, you would kill it. There's tons of Australian chicks you can hit on in Bali if you want to.
Sounds pretty cool. Yeah. I wanted to do that geo arbitrage thing as well.
Yep. So I would say try to, if you're going to do something like this, try to set something up before you leave. So you're not scared, like not just you, Jay, like anybody. Try to set up at least one thing where you're making money before you leave. So once you are out there, you at least have some money coming in, and then you can work on other projects once you're there. But that way you don't get nervous. My version of that was I had savings. But
yeah.
If I didn't have savings, I would have at least had like some form of revenue coming in before I left.
Yeah, I don't have savings, so like right now I'm trying to get that that remote revenue coming in first.
Yep. Well, give me another 6 months, I might be able to hire you, but I can't do it yet.
Awesome. Any last questions for Patrick?
What websites do you look at the most for like nomad type stuff?
Let's see. So I don't look at a lot of websites. I'm in a few Facebook groups. Specifically, I'm in a couple Bali ones. There's a Budapest one. I'm part of the community from the Digital Nomads. So the one thing I will say is you should just try to go be part of this group. You don't have to necessarily quit your job right away, but you can go to Bali or you can go to Budapest this summer and hang out with the nomad community for a week or two and get to know these people. And then you get to learn what they're doing. And some of them might want to hire you actually to do software development. Just trying to look at a website is marginally useful. I will post one that I actually really think was useful, but he's kind of fallen off. His name is Cody McKibben, and there's a really awesome video that inspired me to quit my job that I'll post. But I think being part of Facebook groups that have real people behind it that you actually know is useful.
Cool.
Well, just like anything, if you want to succeed at something, it's very important to surround yourself with people having those same conversations. Otherwise, you just get bogged down by the everyday fucking, you know, drugs or whatever you call it, the dregs of Western society, not drugs.
Yeah,
the dregs.
Yeah. I feel like
just doing the bullshit, commuting to work in LA, coming back 2 hours there, 2 hours back. You know, buying their house out in Temecula.
Exactly.
1,200 square foot house with a pool and a jacuzzi, gaining about 50 pounds, having three kids and calling it a day, bro. Yeah, got my 401k. Awesome. My wife's about 100 pounds.
That guy's on set for life, man.
I want to say two things. So one, I've done some really cool things with the Nomad community in the last year, like when I got to Lisbon, we had like happy hours, and there's tons of girls actually in this community. It's not just guys. It's not it's a legit social community. And if you're part of it, you're part of it. So you just show up to these events and talk about what you're doing, and you can go anywhere around the world and be part of it. second thing I want to say is that there is a sub-community of more experienced digital nomads, which is called the Dynamite Circle. And Robbie, I think there's a huge potential there for you to get clients, because I've been to a couple meetups and stuff with them, and it's like 20 guys and zero girls. So there's definitely a potential there for you to expand leverage as well.
Cool. I will I'll check that out. Is that a can you invite me into that? Is that a Facebook group?
I'm not part of it, but you can Google it. The DynamiteCircle.com, I think those are DynamiteCircle.com. But I'll message you offline after this.
Awesome.
I think I might be part of their Facebook group. If I am, I will invite you, but you have to actually pay to be part of the actual thing.
Oh, I see. Join the DC Tropical MBA, Location Independent Entrepreneurship. Sounds like me.
So to be part of that, you actually have to be making a certain amount of money per month or something like that. And I would say the majority of those people that are in there are dudes. It's probably like 80 to 90% dudes. And they're not the most social savvy people I've ever met in my life. But
well,
there
they
are
got a
some
picture
really...
up here of all chicks. They've got looks like about 20 girls. I don't think I'd sleep with any of them, but hey, I'm a little bit more picky than most.
What's the group called again?
The Dynamite Circle.
If you go to tropicalmba.com is the site I'm looking at. So
they do some cool things. Like there's meetups and conferences in Bangkok, I think Spain, a couple places around the world. I went to one of their events in Barcelona. So they do some cool things and they have good events, but I definitely think they could use your services, Robbie.
Cool. I'm looking at it as we speak. So, all right. Well, I think it's time to wrap it up. Patrick, thanks again. Great content. And loved having you on. I love the success story. And for all you listeners out there, hope you take some inspiration from Patrick and get your ass out of the 9-to-5 and out of that fucking 1,200 square foot piece of shit house in Temecula. Go to fuck it instead. Phuket, Thailand, I mean. Excuse me. All right, guys. Thanks for being on the call and talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.